Hello, it's Sam Crowley from EverydayIsSaturday.com. Here is a special podcast. I'm going to open it up for all the listeners in over 100 countries this goes out to. This is an excerpt, about a 30-minute excerpt from my Inner Circle teleseminar interview only for my private coaching clients. We do it once a month. This month's guest in the month of March was none other than Mr. Willie Crawford. Just a great guy, a great internet marketer. He's been on the internet marketing scene since the mid-90s. He's forgotten probably more about internet marketing than most will know, which is pretty cool to tap into a guy like that. So, hey, enjoy the interview. If you want to connect with Willie, go to willycrawford.com, or you can see him live, as well as myself, speaking at Willie's 50th Birthday Bash Seminar, March 27th to the 29th, 2009, in Orlando, Florida. Go to birthdaybashseminar.com for all of the information. Hope to see you there. Here's my interview, exclusive interview with Mr. Willie Crawford. Enjoy.
Doing very good. Very good. Man, I'm fired up, man. This is going to be an awesome, awesome interview. This is just to refresh your memory, Willie. I think I sent you an email letting you know this is for our exclusive Inner Circle coaching clients, the ones that want to go from Monday to Saturday in record time.
Excellent.
So, yeah, you're going to be a big catalyst for that. I'm excited. I'm very excited to have you on the call today. So most of the recipients of the message will probably listen via recording, but I'm still going to mute out the lines as well just in case anybody calls in from a car or a noisy area. So hold on with just 1 second, Willie.
Okay.
Willie, you still with me?
I sure am.
Okay, excellent. Hey, before we get started, I just wanted to I wanted to read your bio, and it's such an inspiration. I want to go through it, and then I want to give you that formal introduction, and then we're going to get into some great content. And Willie was raised on a tobacco farm in North Carolina, living off welfare most of his youth. His family was so poor that he once wore his grandmother's shoe to school while working to earn money to replace his only dilapidated pair. It built a strong, burning desire in Willie to break away from the poverty. And he went ahead and built his own business, worked his way through college, joined the Air Force, where he traveled to 47 different countries while serving as a navigator on a C-130 transport aircraft. During that time, Willie also learned a little of five different languages. In 96, while still serving in the Air Force in Hawaii, Willie decided to start his own internet-based business. 96 seems like 100 years ago in the internet. By the time he retired in 2003, Willie had built that into a six-figure part-time income. What an awesome part-time income to have. Willie's now one of the world's leading internet marketing experts, having spoken at dozens of seminars in the U.S., Malaysia, Singapore, and the U.K., created dozens of information products, written over 1,100 articles, 34 e-books on e-commerce, hosted seminars, and now hosts his own radio show several times a week. Willie has an incredible, this is amazing, Willie, 1,600, is that right? 1,600 websites?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, Lord, I have one. Every day is Saturday. Tough to manage that one. Some of which gets over 1 million unique visitors per month. And I can go on and on and on and on. Willie, that is an unbelievable resume. And I know you're a JV broker on top of that. You're executive director of the International Association of Joint Venture Brokers. I mean, it's everything, man. I mean, you're so busy. I guess my first question is, how do you keep it all straight?
Well, I use systems to do a lot of things. I funnel a lot of the majority of my tech support issues, a lot of my communications with my staff, with JV partners, et cetera, through a help desk where it's all stored in a secure database. So I'm just very, very organized, and I don't do a lot of things I don't need to be doing. For example, I don't do programming. I don't do graphics. I don't do a lot of those things. I have virtual assistants who do database and who do even some copywriting and things like that. So it's just actually taking to heart the advice about, you know, outsourcing some things and just not trying to do it all myself.
Yeah, that's good advice, especially with the virtual assistants that you can hire on and people all over the world that want to work. And hey, Willie, take us back to the tobacco farm in North Carolina. I mean, where I first introduced you, living off welfare most of your youth, family didn't have a lot of money. I mean, what was that like? Take us back to North Carolina then.
Well, it was actually not a bad existence when you didn't know what the rest of the world was experiencing. My parents separated when I was very young. My mother got the three youngest boys. My father got the two oldest boys. He continued with his Army career, and so I was raised by my mother, who left us on the farm with my grandmother so she could go up to New England where the jobs were better. And so it was the neighbors, the relatives who raised us, and every summer we worked in the tobacco fields, and in the winter we went to school. And so the only money you really had was what you made during the summer, and in the winter there were no real jobs to be had except for one large textile mill, and so that was the only real job, and the others were people just surviving off of what they'd made during the summer, and you know, just little odds and ends jobs, really.
Yeah, it's amazing because the success you've had as an entrepreneur, when I talk to entrepreneurs, I most of them, not all of them, I mean, there are some that broke away from a job or some other mindset, but a lot of them had some sort of entrepreneurial bug or something in the family. Somebody owned a business someplace that taught them, look, you should own a business versus being an employee of the business. And when you talk about how you grew up and then you went to college and then you went into the Air Force, that doesn't lend itself to an entrepreneurial mindset, you know, going from college to the military. I mean, what was it? What was going on that made you so different in your mind that said, when I get out of this, when I got out of the Air Force, I'm going to go ahead and try to start my own business?
When I was around 11 or 12, I was reading magazines like Popular Mechanics, looking at the classified ads in the back and reading little newspapers, and was selling seeds and greeting cards and clothing from catalogs. So there were no jobs, so I had to figure out a way to make money, and I knew people were buying seeds and newspapers and clothing, and so I started selling those things. And somewhere in there I discovered mail order, and I came across one of these ads that says, you know, make $100 per day stuffing envelopes, no addressing required or no stamps or anything. And so I answered one of those ads, and the ad basically said, run the same ad in some ad sheets, and when people request this plan to make $100 a day, you send them a copy of this one page that says run the same ad and tell people to send them a dollar plus a self-addressed stamped envelope. That was my early exposure to mail order, but I started running ads for other things and got my own bulk mailing permit, and so at around 12 or 13, I was already trying to sell things through direct response advertising.
But was any of your friends, I mean, anybody that you could bounce those ideas off of and say, oh, yeah, you're doing that too, Willie, or were you just an anomaly out there by yourself doing these
things? I was an anomaly out there by myself, largely even a loner. I'd get home from school and go and work on my little business or grab my .22 rifle and wander through the forest behind my house. And we didn't have a car, so I didn't do much with sports at school, after school activities. It was just I was off in my own little world, just me and nature and books. I discovered used books online, and I could buy boxes of dozens of books dirt cheap. And so my connection was the mailbox, really. That was where I saw, you know, that not everybody lived in the same conditions that I did, and that's part of what built in me a desire to run my own business and eventually break away from it, from the poverty.
So what do you think now in 2009, where you have Xbox, Wii, Internet, do you think children are growing up the same way you did, wanting that zest for learning and doing different things?
I think so. I mean, the human mind likes being occupied, likes learning new things, we're forever, if we can't sit and think about nothing. So I think that children are the same, and the key is knowing that there is hope. I think, you know, once you see what the outside world is experiencing, if you're living in poverty, then that hope is born, and as long as you can believe it's possible, then you're willing to do what it takes to achieve that.
So take us back to your Air Force days, Willie. How long were you in the service for?
I spent 20 years in the Air Force. I entered right out of college in 1983, and retired in 2003. And so the same day I graduated college, I was commissioned a second lieutenant and was assigned to right near my hometown. So my first 6 years in the Air Force didn't even feel like I was in the military. I could go when I wanted to, and I enjoyed it.
What were some of your greatest memories from the Air Force? Any particular countries you were in or duties that you served that stand out the most in your 20-year tenure?
I traveled all over the Caribbean, all over Europe and Asia. My first trip right out of training was to Grenada. I showed up at my unit the week that Grenada kicked off a little operation down there, and so I flew down there and spent about 2 months flying in and out of Barbados and into Grenada and all of the other islands, and I fell in love with Barbados because it was so peaceful. I mean, we were the American air crew members were carrying weapons and things like that, but the police officers in Barbados all carried nightsticks. I guess they left the guns back at the police station. And so I was just impressed with how peaceful the place was and how friendly the people were.
Wow. You know, I have a couple of coaching clients that have plugged into the Everyday Saturday message, and they are in the military, and they are looking to do pretty much what you did. I mean, entrepreneurial type of mindset that they, well, you know, once they get out and they serve their country and they're ready to roll, they're going to go after it. I mean, they're going to go after probably a different path than most of the people that are currently around. Did you find were you, when it came to wanting to run your own business and you were starting it part-time, again, were you kind of off as a loner in that respect as well with your peers in the service that did not have those same type of aspirations? I guess my point is, how did you fuel your dream while you were in the Air Force?
The majority of people I work with in the military envisioned finishing their military career and then coming back to work for often the same office as a contract civilian. So many of them even managed to maneuver job descriptions enough where they could retire and apply for a job, and they were the only ones really qualified for that job. Yet I didn't want to do that. I wanted greater independence, and I wanted freedom to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And so most of my peers were not trying to start their own businesses. There were a few doing that, but I was also overseas when I first started my business, and I knew I was going to be moving a lot. There were people who were military who were, say, stationed in the lower 48, as we call it, or the continental United States, who had started businesses and would spend as much time working their businesses as they did their military job. But when you were overseas or in another country, that was fairly difficult to do. So I was an anomaly in that respect, and often I'd be out flying across the Pacific Ocean. We'd land, check into our rooms, and I was as often as not trying to find a computer I could get on to check on what was happening online or reading some stuff I'd taken with me.
That's amazing, man. You just don't hear those types of stories. I mean, I've never been in the service, so I know when I traveled, when it was corporate. I mean, the only thing I could even relate to, and it's not even close probably, but with different companies, when we would land at any type of conference, everybody would go to the golf course or the bar or try to do some sort of R&R as quick as they could before the serious stuff set in. And, you know, a lot like you, I went to go try to figure out, you know, what it is. My part-time was my dream to build an internet business as well, or some sort of other type of entity that was waiting for me instead of retiring and waiting till I was 62 to enjoy life. And it's just, it's funny, you know, those seeds that you sow way back in the day, you know, when you land and you go to your room to go to find a computer or a book to dive into, you can see in 2009 probably even the dividends it pays, right, 10, 15 years down the road.
Yeah, and I think I started out pre-medicine in college. I didn't have the background for it, and so the chemistry very quickly told me that I wasn't going to survive as a pre-medicine student, and so I switched to economics and business, and I fell in love with economics. And so as I traveled to places, I was just fascinated with the local economies and how in countries like Korea they'd have vegetables planted in the medium between the two sides of the highway and things like that, how they utilized every little square inch of land some places. And I was just fascinated with how people produced things and interacted and how the world worked economically. So, you know, I was constantly thinking business.
Were you, and again, not to get too personal, but after 20 years in the service, were you at a point financially where you could, you know, go and just take some time off, or did you have to get right after it and find some income if you didn't start another business?
I had earned a pension, which was a couple thousand dollars a month, so I could have, that there are people in my area who live off of their military pensions. Many of them go and get part-time jobs at a local Walmart or whatever. But I wanted something bigger and better. I could have survived easily off of what I had, but military retirement pay is 50% of your regular pay when you retire for 50 years, so it would have been a 50% cut in pay instantly and a big change in lifestyle. And it was just I always wanted my own business. And so and by the time I retired, I'd already – hosted my first live seminar. I'd spoken at one. I had written a book. I had done a lot of things that were already going, and so it wasn't really even a decision. In fact, my last 90 days on active duty were on leave, where I was running my business and checked in with the military maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks.
What rank did you end up exiting the military as?
I left the military as a major. I would have probably made Colonel 06 had I made a few different decisions earlier on. I partied a little too hard and drank a little too much and irritated some of my superiors at the wrong time. And so, you know, I could have very easily been a fairly high-ranking officer, although major is above average. You know, I don't blame the system for not making a higher rank, and I would have probably stayed longer had I made a higher rank, too. So it's good that I didn't. But major is way above average.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, for, again, a novice like myself, that's impressive, no doubt about it. And, you know, again, military is different than civilian life, but it sounds a little bit like a corporation, how it's run as well. I mean, you have to make sure that as you're going up that ladder, you're pretty nice to the people that have your career in their hands. So.
It's politics, and actually many things I learned in the military do carry over to what I do online, and I have to be careful about how I apply those things. For example, in the military, whether or not you got promoted was based on a promotion board just reviewing your paperwork and reading what you were like. And so they didn't know you. All they knew of what you appeared on paper. And I see in the online world and offline probably, it's the same. You know, you are what the world says about you in writing. And so that probably even helps some with my success online, because I know that you have to let the world know who and what you are, especially the positive things about you.
Yeah. What if you saw something online? I'm sure in your internet, nobody is going to have an opportunity to have 100% positive feedback online, because there are people that are going to listen to this that have a direct sales business, a home-based business, where they're maybe with an organization where there might be something less than flattering online.
Right.
How do you read that? How do you absorb that and just deal with that?
As long as I know that I am ethical, that I'm honest, that I have this rule or this saying I used to say all the time, which is that no man has the right to play with another man's dream. And so I honestly do what I can to help my subscribers, my clients, to build businesses. I don't sell anything I don't really believe in. And so I know there will be detractors who, for numerous reasons, including just envy or they've tried things that didn't work for them, will, you know, say negative things about you. And I'm very comfortable with who I am and what I am, with my own integrity. So I don't worry about what other people say about me. My wife has noticed that there's a trend now among some marketers, affiliate marketers, to run what is called negative AdSense ads, where they will, you know, use a headline like, "Is Willie Crawford a scam?" And then they'll plug in a lot of people's names just to grab your attention so they can try to sell you their product. And every time my wife sees that, she grimaces. But, you know, I know it's, you know, you click through to one of those sites and the person says, "I've reviewed these 50 gurus, and out of all the reviews I've done, I recommend this product." And they always go back to the one product they wanted to focus the audience's attention on. So it's just a game that they play. So I don't worry too much about what's being said, because I don't do anything that, quite frankly, can come back and bite me, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you got to be true to yourself, and you can do what you do. I mean, the good thing about the internet is also probably one of its biggest downfalls is everybody has a voice.
And if you do something wrong and get caught, word travels extremely fast. I mean, once something hits Google, it's online forever.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, you can't live in fear. You still got to go after your dream. But you're right. I mean, if you do it the right way and you got a clear conscience and you do it with ethics and integrity, it's all you can do. I'm curious, how much is your wife involved in all these different businesses that you have, Willie?
Not very. I only recently, maybe in the last year and a half, handed off to her management of a cooking website, which was one of my first successful websites, and that was largely because we were doing a daily newsletter, and she was reading it and collecting recipes and things. And so I said, why don't you just run the cookbook portion of the business and run the website and the mailing list. And so I handed that off to her. All the other sites I run or use assistants to run, and so she only runs that portion.
Now, is that your soul food cookbook that's featured in the Soul Food Museum in Atlanta?
That is. Yes, it sure is. That was the first product I created. I basically was told I needed a niche and I needed something people resonated with. And all I had to fall back on really was the times when I lived on the farm and we had these, you know, whatever foods the poor people ate at that time, which you figured out how to make taste good. And so I rationalized that there were a lot of people who moved away from that country setting who missed those recipes. And so I put up a website with those recipes and got lucky, and it was an instant success. People just started flocking through it, joining my mailing list, and asked me to write a book, which I did.
Now, back in 1996, while you were still in the Air Force in Hawaii, you launched your own internet business. What was that business?
I went out to a lot of places that would let you have free web space, and I started writing about building a business. So it was what we would classify today, I guess, as an internet marketing business. It was the business of teaching people how to make money, teaching other people how to make money, which was not the best business to be in. It's still not the best business to be in because it's hard to teach people something you're not doing a lot of. And so there was probably even some fake it until you make it there early on. But I very quickly, in reading what some of the few people out there who were successful said, I learned that I needed to find a niche and find a group of people I resonated with and move on there. So I was selling affiliate products, telecommunication services, memberships and dating sites, books, physical books. Those were my first products. And I very early on joined online discussion lists. There were email lists you could join, and people started telling me that I needed greater credibility, I needed my own domain name, I needed to invest in my business, and I act like I was actually in business. And I took that advice to heart, got off to free hosting accounts and registered my own domain names and never really looked back.
Well, that's amazing. You built that into a six-figure part-time income by the time you retired in 2003, right?
That's correct. And that was, I think the secret there was actually finding what people wanted and offering it to them. And we hear over and over again people say on stage, you know, whatever they're buying, that's what I'm selling. And my friend Marlon Sanders used to say, dead ducks don't quack, you know, so stop trying to sell people things they don't want. And I think I just heard those things enough that I do that. I mean, even today I see people banging their heads against the wall trying to sell things that their customers don't want, and it's just a losing proposition, so I don't do it.
If you were starting your own business right now, you had no internet experience, what market would you go after?
Probably health, just because the biggest bubble in our population, it has to be the baby boomers. They're all aging, they're all developing aches and pains, and they have kids out of the house, so they have disposable income to plow into feeling better about themselves, feeling better, and they're also, if not health, then travel, because they also are traveling more.
Yeah, that's good advice. I mean, the baby boomer, 77 million of them set to retire, you know, in the next 20 years. So that's a big, big market. So when you take a look at a six-figure business, which you've owned, a seven-figure business, which you've owned, what's the difference between the mindset and also the inner workings of a six-figure business and a seven-figure business, Willie? How do you get from one to the other?
But the biggest challenge for most people is learning that you can't do it all yourself, learning how to delegate, how to even bring on virtual or actual physical employees, because we're such control freaks that, I want to do everything myself, no one could do it right. I had to learn what was good enough, and had to learn that I learned in the military that not everyone has the same capabilities I do, and so sometimes you give something to someone realizing it's not going to be done as well as you would do it, but it's good enough. And so it's that gives you that leverage, because if you insist it to be perfect, you'll always want to do it all yourself, and you'll never get anywhere. You can only do so much yourself. And so that's the biggest thing, is just learning to let go of the control, accepting less than perfection from people working for you, and disconnecting to an extent from the product, so that if a product that you produce or a service is not perfect, that you don't see that as a reflection that you're not perfect, but it's that, you know, the product is the best it can be based on all the available conditions.
That's right. It's never going to get perfect. You know, the perfect plan that you always try to get done before you launch it, it's never as good as just a flawed one that gets going. You know, you can always kind of change while you're in motion. And I think one of the biggest breakthroughs for me when I was still in a job, I went to, and I met you at Mike Filsaime's event in Long Island. You probably don't remember. That was back in 2005.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes.
Hey, I'm impressed. I was at that event, and let me tell you, that was quite a chunk of change to put down. And I didn't necessarily, I was coming out of a tough time. I mean, I'd filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy at the time, and I'd lost a business, and I was going back to a job. But I felt the need to get to Long Island at that event because, not necessarily because of Mike or anything, it's just because of the environment. I knew there was going to be a lot of dreamers there, a lot of entrepreneurs, and just the energy level. I'll never forget when I walked in. I mean, I was used to still going into a job every day. And I remember walking into that room, and the music was blaring, and people were talking loud, and everybody's networking, and you could have approached anybody. And I know I talked to you at lunch that day, and that's when I first met you. And I was amazed by all these people that I assume were pretty wealthy people monetarily and spiritually, and they were just great people, how easy it was to talk to them. You know what I mean?
And yeah, I noticed when the very first seminar I went to, was down in the Florida Keys in December of 2002, and I spoke at that seminar. And before then, I had been a lone wolf, you know, basically thinking that it was me against the world. And I put a lot of those people on pedestals, but I very quickly discovered that there are times when they feel the need to shield themselves from the world just to make themselves feel more valued. You know, if you're too accessible, then people won't pay you as much for access to you, I guess, is one way of putting it. But I also discovered that most people, they choose how they grant people access to them and what they do with their free time. And so as long as they see that you're going to add value to the relationship, most people have no problem with adding you to their pool of contacts.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, I remember being there and just thinking, boy, here's an opportunity to, you know, to chat with Mike or with Tom Beal. And Tom Beal and I ended up being friends and from that event, and I did a podcast with him and stayed in touch. And people like yourself, now I'm speaking at your event and your birthday bash. You're turning 50, Willie. 50.
The big
50. Did you ever think it would? Of course it has. I guess it beats not having a birthday, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you have no choice, one of the things I have learned is acceptance, you know. So if it's something I can't change, then I have to look for the bright side of it. I mean, I would certainly love to be 30 again, but with the knowledge and the wisdom I have today.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's amazing. And I know, I mean, I'm so honored, first of all, to be speaking at that event. I know Stephen Pierce is going to be speaking. I saw Stephen speak at Mike's event as well, and man, you talk about a fireball. You talk about a guy that's just wound up full of just so much knowledge and energy. I mean, he was amazing. I was sitting in the front row at Mike's event when Stephen spoke. I've never seen him speak before, and he's dripping with sweat, and he's passionate about what he's talking about, and I was really impressed. So to share the stage with him at your event is going to be awesome. Just talking about those live events and staying on the topic of that, you know, we're going to turn this into a mini podcast. I'm going to put it out to the Everyday Saturday Show, which is out in 150 countries. And, you know, when you talk about going to your event at the end of March of 2009, March 27th to the 29th in Orlando, what do you tell someone just to say, hey, come on out to a live event to experience what you and I were just talking about?
Yeah, I tell them that you can sit at home and work on your business and contact people via email or phone, and it's just not the same as when you mentioned that at Mike's event, when you're in that room and you feel the energy and you realize that there are hundreds, thousands of other people doing what you dream of doing and that they are enjoying it. And so the energy itself is contagious, but it's also the connections that you make. Most of us cannot grow our businesses very much without other people working with us. And the bigger names get so bombarded with requests to joint venture with them, to help, to work with them on projects, that it's human nature to prefer working with people that we know. And nothing compares to sitting down across the table from somebody at lunch or at dinner and asking them, so what do you do? And them whipping out their pictures of their grandkids or their dog or whatever. And you just connect with people on a deeper level. Then when you follow up those people saying, you know, I'm doing some product, that's maybe an interview product, can I get you to do an interview with me for my product project, they're more likely to say yes. They know you. They learn to like you. I'm very much a person who trusts his intuition, his instincts. And so you know, when I like to look people in the eye, and if I get a feel like there's something not right about this person, the hair on the back of my neck is standing up, I trust that signal as much as if I get a warm, fuzzy feeling about someone. And you can't get that from staying at home. You have to get out and actually interact with people.
Yeah, that seems like a great place to end it right there. What a perfect way to end it. Be at a live event. Go to a live event. There's nothing like it. I remember my first one like it was yesterday. I still have great personal and business relationships with the people I met. So, hey, hope to see you in Orlando for Willie's 50th birthday bash, internet marketing seminar, phenomenal event in Orlando. Get there if you can, birthdaybashseminar.com. For everybody in the Everyday Saturday community, my name's Sam Crowley. I believe in you. I believe in your dream, and I believe that you are a champion.